This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Friday, December 13th. Well, after 17 hours of debate over the last 2 days, the House Judiciary Committee has now voted on the two articles of impeachment, one for abuse of power, the other for obstruction of Congress.
Mr. Klein votes no. Mr. Armstrong?
No.
Mr. Armstrong votes no. Mr. Stubbe?
No.
Mr. Stubbe votes no.
Has every member voted who wishes to vote?
Mr. Chairman, may I ask how I'm recorded?
How is the gentleman recorded?
Mr. Gohmert, you are recorded as no.
Yeah, I want to make sure.
Mr. Chairman, there are 23 ayes and 17 noes.
So that was part of it. Here's another little bit.
The article is agreed to. The resolution is amended as ordered, reported favorably to the House. Members will have 2 days to submit views. The resolution will be reported as a single amendment in the nature of a substitute. Without objection, staff is authorized to make technical and conforming changes. Without objection, the committee is adjourned.
Mr. Chairman.
What purpose does the gentleman seek recognition?
Pursuant to Clause 2L of Rule 11, I give notice of intent to file dissenting views.
Notice is heard. Without objection, the committee is adjourned.
The committee was adjourned. With me now, Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Hi, Susan. Thanks so much for coming on. What a day.
What a short day. After, more than 14 hours yesterday of debate, this took 10 minutes this morning. But the outcome, of course, not a surprise. 23-17, a vote straight along party lines.
What was that thing at the end there with, I guess it was ranking Republican Collins, reserving the right to offer dissenting views just before Chairman Nadler gaveled it out of session?
Yes, that's just the pro forma procedures that are taken when a bill is approved by a committee and sent to the floor. It's a sign, and this will not surprise you, that Republicans plan to contest this impeachment when it comes to the full House next week.
People expected a vote when the amendment process ended around 11 o'clock last night. Instead, Chairman Nadler called that recess until 10 o'clock this morning, which infuriated Republicans. At least they acted infuriated. Why did Nadler not take that vote?
Well, Democrats were also unhappy about the timing because they thought they had an understanding with Republicans that the debate would wrap up about 5 or maybe 6, and they would then have the vote yesterday in pretty good time. Because, of course, the debate yesterday, it went on for more than 14 hours, but it was the same half hour of debate just repeated 28 times. But what Republicans did was continue to offer amendments, continue the debate process until 11. And at that point, Chairman Nadler thought it was not a good idea to be open to the charge that they had voted in the dead of night to impeach the president. So he went ahead and postponed that vote until this morning.
Although, funny enough, from a Democratic Party point of view, wouldn't it have been more of a prime time show, the 11 o'clock hour Eastern time, 8 o'clock on the West Coast, than doing it at 10 in the morning on a weekday?
Well, I think that's entirely possible. They may have a smaller audience this morning, but it seemed like a more appropriate moment to do it. You know, after that long and contentious debate, everybody exhausted, the partisanship of the moment underscored. I think that Democrats saw this as something that could look bad for them, that could be used in ads and attacks for them, that as midnight approached, they voted against President Trump. So they decided to wait till this morning.
And ranking Republican Collins called it the most Bush League play I've seen in my life, postponing the vote to this morning. Did they really care so much, or was that just more theatrical sniping at the process?
I think it was probably theatrics. I mean, for Congressman Collins, I bet with some benefit of some hindsight, he could think of other things that have happened during his long career that were more outrageous than this. But it is true that Chairman Nadler did not give a courtesy heads up to Doug Collins beforehand about what he was going to do. So in that way, it's just one more demonstration about how partisan and fraught every single thing is now in Washington.
Susan, what I expected weeks ago would happen has not happened the way I anticipated. I thought the facts were so clear that the debate would quickly become framed around this was bad, but maybe not worthy of impeachment. Instead, all day yesterday, the Republicans on the committee argued that the president's behavior was perfect. Was that a change of strategy?
Well, it was, the Republicans had various strategies, and one of the concerns some Republicans have had is that they haven't had one clear strategy. The approach they took, by and large, yesterday was the one that President Trump wanted them to take. At the point when some Republicans were suggesting that what the president did wasn't a good thing, but it didn't rise to the level of removing him from office, the president made it clear that that was not his view of what had happened. His view was he had done nothing wrong. He wanted a full-throated defense. So what you saw the Republicans doing a couple things yesterday. One, arguing he had done nothing wrong. Second, not bothering to argue about what he did, but instead raising other concerns, like what did Joe Biden do when he was vice president and his son was working for a gas company in Ukraine? And you also saw continued complaints about the process being unfair. I think Republicans felt that was pretty successful in at least muddying the waters about what it was exactly that the president did when it came to Ukraine and why Democrats felt it warranted impeachment.
And just journalistically speaking, these are mostly arguments, the ones that defend the president's behavior, that defy the known facts. So many witnesses and text messages show aide in a White House meeting conditioned on announcing the investigations, but the Republicans were arguing they weren't. They say Trump withheld aid out of concern about corruption overall, but there's no evidence of that, only that he and his people kept pressing for the announcement of investigations. They say Joe Biden worked to get the Ukrainian prosecutor who was investigating his son's company fired, as if it was to save his son from something, when really that prosecutor had shut down the investigation, and the U.S. and Europe together were lobbying for that prosecutor to get sacked so that corruption investigations would resume. So is this new in American history, defending a president by asking the American people to believe what they're told, not the evidence in front of their eyes?
So this is one, I think, of the most distressing thing that's happened in the past few years in our democracy, which is you can fact check day and night, as you just did. Newspapers run fact checks every day in the paper and online. But if you repeat something over and over again, even if a fact checker says it's wrong, we found that you can convince a fair number of your supporters that what you say is right, or at least nobody's right. There's no one to believe. We don't believe anybody. That has been something that President Trump has done since his days as a candidate. And our best effort as fact checkers on some big issues, including this one, I think have mixed results with our readers and our listeners.
Were the Republicans and Democrats really as upset with each other yesterday as the testimony made it seem? I'm looking at the USA Today headline on this morning, which is "Fury and Other Takeaways from Thursday's Marathon Impeachment Debate." So was it real fury, or was it just what they felt was the necessary theater on each side?
Well, that's a tough question. There is some fury. There is indeed a very dyspeptic mood in Congress and in Washington. Everybody's at their battle stations. People, I guess I think the headline is right. I think people feel pretty furious. I think Democrats feel furious about what they see, what they view as President Trump getting away with something that was a grave danger to our nation. And Republicans also seem pretty furious. Maybe theirs is a bit more manufactured, but pretty effective. And I was wondering why the hearing went on for so long yesterday, given that there was so little new that was said. It really was like everybody was reading a script. And I think one thing that encouraged Republicans to keep going was that all the tweets from President Trump, 123 tweets from President Trump yesterday, his biggest record ever, a lot of them encouraging Republicans to keep making arguments, a lot of them retweeting the arguments that Republican members of the Judiciary Committee were making on their own Twitter feeds. So maybe a bit of stage management, but in fact, people here in Washington are pretty mad.
Can't blame the guy for tweeting that much, I think. You can blame Trump for a lot of things, but if you are being impeached at that moment, for you to be lashing out in response, that's just human, right?
Well, except is it smart? You know, you think about how President Clinton handled his impeachment, the last president to be impeached. I covered that. Never thought I'd cover an impeachment. Now I'm covering my second one. With that one, President Clinton gave every public indication that he was paying no attention to what was going on with his impeachment. He was totally focused on the people's business. Now, we know, especially we know now, behind the scenes that he was quite concerned and watching closely his impeachment. But he thought politically it was important to convey the idea that he cared about what was happening in your life, not in his life. We haven't seen that from President Trump. It's quite clear that this is issue number one for him and that it is has dismayed him quite a bit.
But also just in terms of political strategy, that clearly worked in Clinton's case to seem like he was staying focused on the people's business and he was looking away to whatever degree he was allegedly looking away. For Trump, I think the game is to keep enough of his supporters aggrieved that there won't be enough pressure on the Republican senators to flip and convict him next year. And by constantly paying attention and shouting about it on Twitter or elsewhere is the way to keep that minority of Americans who are firmly with him and feel aggrieved along with him in there.
A minority of Americans, but a big majority of Republicans. And that is the political fact that has protected President Trump with this impeachment. Republican members of Congress have been unwilling to break with him. And I think that's because he has such solid support among Republicans in their districts and in their states.
Is it possible that the politics of impeachment are actually aiding progress on policy items in the U.S.? There was that bizarre juxtaposition the other day this week of bringing the articles of impeachment at 9 o'clock and then having another news conference, Pelosi, at 10 o'clock to announce that they've come to an agreement with the Trump administration on the USMCA. We see the spending agreement now, so there will not be last-minute brinksmanship over a government shutdown, as you were just referencing. We also see now, it looks like, Trump and China possibly coming to some partial agreement over their trade dispute and maybe a lifting of some of the tariffs. So suddenly, impeachment is happening and things are moving. What do you make of it?
Yes, I think that's such a good point. And it's a little counterintuitive because you'd think if you were impeaching a guy, maybe it'd be harder for you to cut a deal with him. But in fact, Speaker Pelosi has been quite focused on trying to score some deals on issues on which there is bipartisan agreement to counter the argument that Democrats can't get anything done. They're just focused on opposing the president. And I think that for the White House as well, the impeachment drama has made it them more eager to have some achievements on other fronts. And of course, the USMCA trade accord has been one of the president's top agenda items since his election to have something that replaces NAFTA. So I think it has helped trying to reach deals on some of these other issues. We may be almost through with the things on which they can agree. We head into an election year in January. That may add to the mix and make it even more difficult to get things done. But it has been, in fact, a pretty productive December.
Republicans made a big show of saying the process in the Judiciary Committee was what they call the death of minority rights in the committee. Republicans, as the party of minority rights, is rich in the larger scheme of things. But as it pertains to the committee, here is ranking Republican Doug Collins from his opening statement in the last round on Wednesday night.
What will be known by this committee from here on out is that this committee has now sounded the death of minority rights in this committee. This committee has become nothing but a rubber stamp. This committee is amazingly now on such a clock and calendar process that they don't care. Facts be damned.
So what are their main complaints and how founded are they?
So Democrats control the House. Democrats control this committee. The House has a long tradition of not giving the minority very many rights. That's some difference with the Senate, where the minority has more power to affect things than they do in the House. House Republicans and Republicans on this committee wanted a much broader process where they would bring in, for instance, Adam Schiff, the Intelligence Committee chairman, to testify, and Nancy Pelosi and Hunter Biden and the whistleblower that got this Ukraine story started. That was not a direction that House Democrats were willing to go. So that is, I mean, that's sort of the nature, I think, of the complaints of House Republicans. They may have complaints. They do not have surprises. It is not a surprise to them, the rules that were put in place, even if they didn't like them.
Why didn't Democrats just let the Republicans have their day of calling their own witnesses, as they keep saying they've wanted? For one thing, it's arguably the right thing to do on something this consequential. For another, the evidence is so on the Democrat side. Why not have confidence that they can cross-examine people who are full of it or win a winnable argument?
Well, I think that Democrats felt that all Republicans were trying to do was not ferret out the truth, but muddy up the waters. And they certainly didn't want to open the door to have Joe Biden, for instance, be subpoenaed to testify before the committee. They saw this as irrelevant to the inquiry that they were pursuing and unhelpful in trying to get the public to understand what they were doing.
Does this now move to the Senate, where the Republicans have the majority, where they're going to have some power to call Joe Biden or Hunter Biden? I mean, again, you could make an argument if you're a Democrat, okay, I'll make that deal. Bring in Joe Biden, who there's no evidence that he did anything corrupt, and we can bring in Mulvaney and Pompeo and Giuliani.
So you're Joe Biden. Would you like to be called to testify before the Senate in this impeachment trial? I think politically the answer is probably no.
I don't know.
Let me speak for Joe Biden and say unlikely that he would see this as a big plus. The Senate can do what they want. They can call witnesses or not. The indications we're having now is that they will choose, that the Republican majority in the Senate wants a quick trial without witnesses, but they haven't closed the door to that. And that could lead to things, for instance, having some of the administration officials who refuse to comply with subpoenas and refuse to voluntarily testify before the House to come forward. And that would be okay with Democrats. Democrats would be delighted to have Mick Mulvaney, the acting White House Chief of Staff, or Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, answer questions. I think that is probably not going to happen, but we don't know yet. All the rules aren't set, and the course of the Senate trial is not entirely clear.
We're just about out of time. Just refresh us on the timeline to the extent that you can before you go. So the articles of impeachment have now passed the Judiciary Committee. You said they go to the full House on Wednesday, but this took, you know, one night, one morning, and one whole day of debate. What's going to happen on the full House floor?
You know, I don't think all those rules have been set. And of course, the timetable is not engraved in stone, but the plan is to deal with it on Wednesday. I'm sure we'll get more information about that from House Democrats before then. Then it goes to the Senate. The Senate timetable is up to the Senate, but the early indications are that that's the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell hopes to have this handled in the first 3 weeks of January, and so that they can move on to other things. But, you know, things change. Want to be a little cautious about being too certain. The conventional wisdom says that by February 1st, the president will have been acquitted by the Senate and will have moved on to other things. We'll see if that's what happens.
Yeah. But just about the House, do all 435 members of the House get a say on the House floor in public?
Well, conceivably, they're part of the House. They'll be debating this resolution. There'll be managers of the House that allocate the time that is that each side gets to debate. So it's possible that there'll be some who want to speak who don't have a chance to. It's also possible on an issue this controversial as this that there'll be members who don't want to speak out on the floor. So we'll see. I don't think we know yet.
So they'll convene Wednesday. We don't know if they'll conclude Wednesday.
That's right. Although we think that the plan is for them there to be a conclusion on Wednesday.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Plus, she's got a great book about Barbara Bush that came out earlier this year. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Before we go, listeners, here's a new invitation for you to have your voice heard on the podcast. We've now completed our project collecting your proposed articles of impeachment. Now we're inviting voicemail messages from anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office. Tell us why. You might be a Republican who thinks he did nothing wrong. You might be a Democrat who thinks bad but not impeachable. Maybe you think, well, Pence would be worse. Or whatever. If you are anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office, call in and tell us why. Leave your voicemail at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK, and maybe we'll use yours on the air. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.